Hey, thanks for tuning into Code Chat. My name is Jeremy Foster. You can find me online at codefoster.com or on Twitter at codefoster. And I'm joined today by Josh Twist.
Try again. Yeah, nice. Yeah, Josh Twist.
Twisting that on purpose.
It happens a lot, don't worry. Yeah.
How are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks. It's good to see you. Good to see you again, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
I think last time I talked with you, you were working hot and heavy on Windows Azure Mobile Services,
right? That's right, Project Zumo, I love that thing, yeah.
How's that going now?
It's going great. They recently launched .NET support for backend, which was one of the, if you remember, the backend was Node.js, was JavaScript to begin with, and one of the most requested features that service has is please let me build my backend in .NET and do things like run the thing locally.
You mean there are actually people that don't want to write JavaScript?
It goes against Atwood's law, but totally. There are people who like writing .NET code, especially, there's tons of reasons why you'd want to do that. But Node still gets a lot of love, and there's still a lot of people building Node apps as well. So you get to choose now which backend you want to write. So that's one of the big things they did. They also have a focus on business apps. So, they have support for Active Directory. They have an offline sync feature, which is really cool if you're building mobile apps, right? So that's cool. So there's a lot of good stuff going on over in mobile services.
Now you're saying they, so you're not working with that group anymore, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not on that project anymore. So I went to work on some other stuff.
Tell us about
recently.
That.
So I work on two projects. One is called Azure API Management, and one is called Hybrid Connections.
Okay.
API Management is a new service in Azure that we launched at TechEd. So we launched this in May. And it's the result of an acquisition. So we bought a company.
Okay.
We bought the company back in October. And the company, it was called Epiphany.
Okay.
We launched this new...
It's spelled funny, right?
It's spelled funny. So it's not an epiphany. It's a play on words, right? It's an API.
Like any good framework or platform.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a little play on words. So you had an epiphany. Or the joke is that Azure had an epiphany and it bought this product. It was a little startup out of Washington, D.C. Okay. Yeah, and we launched it as a service into preview in May. So just
there is so much being added to Azure. Do you suppose at some point we're going to run out of room in the portal? I mean, visually?
Maybe, but we do, just in terms of the list here, as you can see on screen, it is getting long.
I think we need a new portal.
I think we need a new portal. Well, someone came to your rescue, right? Highly searchable, customizable screen. And so that's the portal preview will take care of you there. The preview portal, rather. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Oh, so what is Epiphany?
So Epiphany API Management is it's helping people to publish APIs. So in a nutshell, that's what it's about. I think perhaps a more interesting question is why on earth, what does it mean to publish an API? Why would I want to do that? In the beginning, if you will, APIs are becoming such a common part of the way people think about doing business even today, that there's been a total shift in the way we think about APIs. Mm-hmm. So there's a quote I like from a guy called Byron Deeter where he talked about how APIs have emerged from obscurity. And this makes total sense to me because I've been a developer for, I don't know, 20 years, something embarrassing like that. And I've always known what an API is. Back to the days I was doing BASIC, we were chatting about this earlier, weren't we? BASIC on my Commodore Amiga, I was using APIs to do stuff, to talk to the computer. Or in .NET, I have the BASIC
class
libraries.
Did you use that term?
I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did. The base class libraries, or writing COM in VB6 and other horrors that I have struggled through in the past, I've known what an API is.
Yeah.
But things have changed now. Everybody knows what an API is. My wife isn't technical. I tell the story all the time. But she now knows that an API is how her Fitbit communicates with the cloud. It's how Smart Scale at home communicates with her phone. It's all through API. She even asks me sometimes if a thing has an API, because she knows that means I can go and do stuff with it. Yeah, because we're installing like Internet of Things all over the house. We have like one of these Nest thermostats, and wouldn't it be cool if we could set up some automatic timer through something in If This Then That that can talk to the Nest app? And this is all possible, and it's all possible thanks to APIs. So APIs are becoming, they're at this kind of fulcrum at the moment where things are shifting, and they're really, really a main something that goes beyond just technical. That it's something that business people understand, that non-technical people understand.
Right.
And so publishing an API is about a couple of things. Let's imagine that APIs are going to be huge. I think we've kind of established that. Then in order to be successful in me adding an API, there's a couple of things I need to address, right? I need to make it easy for people who want to use that API to learn how to use the API, to understand what it's about, what it looks like, what the different calls are, how it behaves, and
to be able to see the surface area.
Of course, yeah. To just understand that. And because APIs are becoming so mainstream, there's a lot of competition now. Mm-hmm. Like whatever API you decide to build and maybe to sell, that might be something you do, is you might actually monetize an API. Then you need to be competitive. You need to make sure that you have a great experience, right? Mm-hmm. That's a ton of stuff to worry about. You also, I mean, it would be unthinkable, right? If you were to launch a marketing campaign and you were to have a website hosted on Azure websites that's promoting, I don't know, Foster's razors, you know, so you can trim the beard perfectly, right? Yeah. You know, then you would have to plug in web analytics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be unthinkable that you wouldn't do that, that you wouldn't have insights into how your marketing campaign is progressing. Well, it's the same with your API program, but it's your digital website. This is a website for machines to communicate with. And so you need analytics that are going to tell you, you know, which developers are using your API, which operations are getting the most traffic. Is it performing well? Is the response time good or is it bad? Are there errors? Are there things you should be worried about? And how can you improve the response time? So there's this whole category of things that are kind of in addition to the core business problem you're trying to solve, right? Like if you add an API that, I don't know, let's think of an API that you might have that allows people to resell these razors, this business that we just invented, right? Then you might provide an API for that. Now, if you're going to do that, you're going to put it out there, you need to make it easy for people to come and learn how to use it, but you also need to make them really, really quick in being successful. Because you might have competitors who are trying to sell through an API, right? And there's a couple of techniques you can do to achieve that in terms of the reducing the time to first successful call. So this is the notion that the moment a developer or a partner tries out your API, that they can very, very quickly get a transaction flying through the system, right? There's some stuff I can show you that we do that we make it very, very easy for you. But the thing is, you want to focus, back to my first point actually, you want to focus on what is the meat of your API is selling razors.
Yeah.
It isn't analytics. You don't want to go and write an analytics solution. It isn't writing and coming up with a structured way of presenting developer information, you know, a developer portal. It isn't building techniques to solve that time to first successful call. There are other things you might want to do. One story that I often tell is that when I was a developer, I used to work at a travel consolidator, and we had a partnership with another travel consolidator where they could use our API to sell our flights on their website. Now, unfortunately, there was a bug in their code, and they hit a loop. This loop hit our API and brought our site down. It brought API down, the whole thing down. I got slapped around. Next thing I had to go and do was build a rate limiting system. So I got that, you know, the early lesson in rate limiting.
Yeah.
You don't want to build a rate limiting system.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be easy if you could just come and buy one and put it in front of your API? Yeah. So one thing I think about, if your API is part of your business, then API management is kind of to an API as the retail store is to a store in the town center. You know, sorry, you would think of, I've not phrased that well actually. Let's imagine that you're Gap and you have a retail store. You're not going to build all of the software that runs that retail store, right? You're going to go to some solution provider to build you a point of sale system, a stock management system, etc. API management is the solution for that with respect to your APIs.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes
sense. But let me say a little bit more, because it's not just about selling an API. There are tons of scenarios where people aren't making money out of their API. Lots of scenarios where people are, people like Twilio and Stripe, etc. They do business through an API.
That's their deliverable.
But at the TechEd launch event, when we launched at TechEd, I talked about one of our customers, which was Wellmark Blue Cross and Blue Shield. So your American listeners or viewers will be familiar with the idea of a mutual insurance. You know, like we use one here with Microsoft, and that's how I get my healthcare, basically, right? Now, what you find is that employee portals at large organizations want to integrate with the data from the selected mutual insurance provider. Makes sense? And to do that, it's a pain. Like, there has to be special phone calls between the developers in that company and the developers here. Wouldn't it be easier if you just had your existing data and services, if you work at Wellmark, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield, you could publish that API and make it incredibly easy for your partners to come and leverage your data and integrate it into their own experiences. And that makes you a better provider. provider to that. Right. You know, it, just general goodness. These guys are killing the game. Makes you more competitive. Makes you more attractive. In the case of Wellmark Blue Cross and Blue Shield, they're more attractive to their corporate customers because they provide these capabilities, and they use Azure API Management to do that. But beyond even that, there's now such a focus on business agility. So I'll give you an example that's concrete, that's here inside Microsoft. So Microsoft has its own IT department, right? MSIT, that do all the stuff that IT departments do.
So we have a few computers on desks.
Just a few computers on desks and systems and servers and processes that have to be managed. And increasingly, and maybe at times you've felt this, I know I have in the past, I've wanted to get my hands on some data about something going on in Microsoft and wanted to be able to build a solution around that. Mm-hmm. And you can bet there's an API for it somewhere at Microsoft. How do I find it?
Yeah.
How do I, Microsoft IT want to make it easy for people to use internal data and services in a managed way, right? Don't want people bringing down the system by abuse.
Easy for the right person and impossible for the wrong person.
Exactly, exactly. And so API management is a solution there, because what you're doing is you're publishing your APIs internally. Make sense? So those are kind of the three main scenarios we think about. We think about an organization publishing an API that's going to be for profit, if you will. That's how I'm going to do business. An API that's for business relationships, and then even an API that is to improve the internal agility of a business.
Three scenarios, but like eight functionalities or capabilities.
That
I think there were a few of those that I never even thought of as a pain point for for developers and for kind of business-to-business communication.
That's right.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So this is a, what about API versioning?
Yeah, so that's a common ask, actually. And one of the things, we should probably talk about how this laid out and explain how that works.
Okay,
so what
cool.
I'm going to do is switch to a little slide I have here to show you what the solution looks like. So what typically happens is you have an existing API, or you go and build a new one. You decide you're going to go and build your Razor Sales API, right? So this is the API. And then you decide, hey, you know, I don't want to build an analytics solution. I don't want to build a rate limiting solution. I don't want to build a partner management solution. So I'm going to use Azure API Management.
Okay.
Then Azure API Management contains three components. The first is the publisher portal. So this is where you, as the API publisher, come to configure your APIs, right? So where you're going to come to configure the API management solution. And what you're going to do is actually tell it where the backend API is. So that's one, that's one part of the solution.
Okay.
Developers will come to your developer portal. So the developer portal is an experience that's designed to make it easy for the people who want to use your API to do so. So they know how it works, they can play around with it and invoke it, and just see all your documentation, et cetera. Now those developers are going to produce apps or websites or services that use the API, and instead of going directly against your backend endpoint over here, they hit our proxy.
Oh, interesting.
And our proxy is where the magic happens.
Okay.
So it's basically an abstraction layer. It's super high performance. Like, it adds, you know, between about 15 milliseconds latency is all it adds over the existing
15?
API. So it's 15.15. Okay. So it's really, really thin. And then that thing invokes your API. But it allows us to do a ton of stuff in here.
Yeah.
So we collect all the analytics. That's where we do the smarts. We enforce your, you know, your group-based access rules. So you can put developers into groups and say, this group can access this API but can't access this API, et cetera, et cetera. We can also do rate limiting based on those developers and say, you know, each developer can only make 30 calls per second, or you set the rules effectively. And that's how the solution is laid out. Now, another thing this allows you to do is abstract the structure of the backend API from the front end, and that's where versioning comes in. So you can easily change the way this URL looks, you can change the behavior of that API, and one thing we recommend actually is when you're configuring the proxy, that's when you start to think about versioning. So you can simply put in some versioning ideas, like add the one, you know, in the URL. If that's not built into your API, you can come and do it over here.
I see.
And that gives you that abstraction necessary to start thinking about how you would version your API.
Wow.
Makes sense?
So does it handle the application-based authentication, so that I, as the developer, I create a new app, and this app has some sort of an application key, and it's authorized to use the service?
You can do that to think about the app calling key. You can put rules in place to restrict that. One thing we don't get in the way of is user auth. So one of the little, you know, the little sort of people here we haven't shown is users.
Okay.
So an app has users. And that's because that kind of works transparently.
Okay.
You're typically, what happens is a token encryption passes along on a HTTP header, like the authorization header. Mm-hmm. That just flies through the proxy.
Okay.
And so at the end of the day, us thinking about users wouldn't make a ton of sense anyway, because your app has to understand a user.
Yeah.
It has to mean something to you.
Right.
That just flies through the system. But we do understand developers and your relationship with them and what APIs they're allowed to call, et cetera. So take, for example, we mentioned mobile services. The mobile services application key, which is a concept, would just fly through our proxy. That just flies through seamlessly. And you can totally use the proxy with mobile services. Actually, that happens quite a bit. People build an API. Mobile services is a great way of doing an API, and you can put API management.
And this can be whatever technology I want, basically.
Oh, yeah, we don't, you know, it doesn't, it can be, actually, I think the next point here is that this can be hosted anywhere.
Yeah.
So we'd love it if it was on Azure, of course. I work on the Azure team. But we don't mind.
And I think the developer will love it, too.
Well, of course, and of course they will, yeah, you're right. But it could actually be hosted anywhere. It could be on premises. It could be in a rival cloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be hosted anywhere. It can be written in any language. It could be PHP, MySQL. As long as it speaks HTTP, we don't care.
So does it need to be a modern HTTP REST-based API, or could it be a classic SOAP?
So I wouldn't say we have first, at this stage, we don't have really first-class support for SOAP.
Yeah.
Because it's just HTTP, it does work. It does work. it's I would be overselling it a little bit to say that we do a lot with that. One feature we're looking at right now, actually, in fact, we have some research going on in the team now, is SOAP to REST. So we'll connect to an existing SOAP API and project a REST API.
So
this is one of the things people like about this service. And I can show you a demo of some of the stuff we do today that you can project a more friendly API based on the changes you can make in the proxy.
That's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, so one thing we can do in just a matter of a few clicks, and I can show you a demo, is we can take an API that's producing XML and turn it into JSON.
Just
like that.
Yeah. I actually saw Google Trends online recently of XML API versus JSON API, and it's pretty impressive to see the decline of XML-based APIs and the rapid hockey stick of the JSON-based APIs.
Yeah, that makes sense. But you think about what an organization has available to them already. They've got tons of APIs.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could start to move those assets forward,
leverage
them and use them, but project something that, you know, if this is an iOS device over here, XML parsing on iOS isn't easy, you know.
Yeah,
whereas
right.
JSON is native; they actually have controls to do that built into the, you know, into the frameworks.
Yeah.
So a solution like this is very helpful for helping you project a more modern API.
Okay, so I can see the obvious advantages in somebody that has a pretty significant API offering, a pretty significant, say, business to business scenario. What about for your average indie app developer who's making one or two apps? Is there going to be significant advantage for him in this?
Actually, I think that's one of our, so you know, we have a good number of customers on the system already in preview, over 1,000.
Wow.
We have a ton of those are startups, a ton of those are small companies. We have big guys as well, but we do have lots of organic, you know, we've been working, had a tight relationship with some big companies that are coming in to use this. But as we look at our logs, we can see that we got a lot of startups that we're reaching out to and talking to. And the reason for that is, today, a startup almost has to have an API. It's part of doing business. You know, it has to have a way.
Have a coffee machine and an API.
An API and an Euron chair. those are the three rules. Because that's how, think of any SaaS vendor. If you are a SaaS solution, it is critical that you have a great API program, because otherwise you can't take place in this SaaS ecosystem, right? If you are Box and DocuSign, then those have got to have great APIs because you can't mash them up otherwise. And therefore, having tools like a great developer portal that makes it easy for your partners to come and learn how to use your API. And there's more to this, actually. So one of the things we do here is developers come here. They don't just get access to the API. They sign up and create an account. So they register. They register with you. So you have a relationship with these guys. You can then, obviously, you get an API key that allows me to track the behavior of that particular developer. I can see you using it more. These guys can raise issues right here on our developer portal. It's hosted on Azure API Management to communicate and interact with you, to say, you know, I had a problem with this API, how does this work? And you can respond to them and manage that communication. So this is a great tool.
The publisher has that
I can show you that, So in your publisher portal down here, you'll see all issues raised for each API, you can go in and respond to them. And so have a dialogue with developers right here in your developer portal.
Well, we better go take a look.
Let's do it. I think a demo, I think it is time for a demo. So here we are. Here's the solution. It's in the Azure portal, as you'd expect. And creating a new instance of API management is a doddle. new app service, API management, create, and I enter a few bits of data and I'll be up and running in a matter of minutes. Now this is actually going to provision me some dedicated hardware.
Okay. Right?
So I'm going to get some VMs that are specifically for me. Some okay. to handle that front end traffic on the proxy, some processing in worker roles to handle the analytics and churn through the analytics and get my data. So it takes usually about 8 minutes to create an instance. So I'm not going to bore you with that now.
And this is in preview, so right now if you've got an Azure subscription, you just kind of use it for free, don't have to...
It's not free, so you will pay for it in preview. It's
okay.
half price, right?
Okay, great.
So we can talk about the pricing as
Excellent.
Well at the end. I'll show you the pricing. So I come in here and I click API demo. There's one I created earlier,
okay.
right, to save time. And this is the Azure portal, as you're familiar with. We have a quick start here. We have a dashboard that shows some of the traffic. This isn't a particularly busy instance because I just used it for a few demos. And I can scale just as you would expect. So we have a developer tier, which is where you kind of come to learn the ropes and play with the system.
Great.
And we have the standard tier, which is where you want to go when you go to production.
Yeah, right?
So the minute you go to production, in order to get a decent availability guarantees, et cetera, then you want to be in the standard tier. And you can scale this up to 4 instances now, and that means that you can handle, each instance of standard takes 200 million API calls per month. Right, so that's the limit. So you can get up to 800 million. If you actually need more during preview, then just reach out to us and we'll find a way to up that number. So that's the scale. And then we can do some heavy lifting configuration here. So you remember, if I go back to that slide for a second actually, that here we have something that developers can come use, right?
Yeah.
Now, we will default to creating a URL for you that is of the form, you know, foster.azure-api.net.
Okay.
Maybe you take your brand more seriously.
Yeah,
than that,
right.
You want to customize the domain. Likewise, the proxy is going to be at foster.azure. So the portal would be at foster.portal.azureapi.net, and the proxy would be at foster.azureapi.net. Those are customizable.
Okay.
You want to be able to customize your domains, right? So that you can be
similar to the websites. You just point a
very similar. Yeah. So you'd have, you know, this might be developer.foster.com, and this could be api.foster.com,
great.
Whatever you choose.
Great.
And so over on configure here, we can set the custom domains, and of course we can upload SSL certificates for them as well. So you can
okay.
so you can have SSL still working at that layer even behind
great.
A custom domain. But that's it for screens here in the Azure portal.
Okay.
Because we have this separate experience, the publisher portal, which is where I configure the details of my APIs. So I'm just going to cancel that. Yep. To go out here, I go back to one of my dashboard or the quick start and hit this manage button.
All right.
And that's going to single sign me on as the administrator into my management experience, right?
Okay, so we're the publisher now.
So this is the publisher.
Yeah.
So what I would have here is a list of all the APIs. I've not added one yet, so we'll add that in a moment. And you'll see that in this dashboard, it would give me at a glance view of my traffic that's going on for each API, any issues that have been logged. We'll see we get a little square for that. That allows me to see any issues that are coming in for developers. But I think the best way to show this stuff is to go and add an API,
okay.
right, to show you what it's like. So in order to demo this, we have a fun little app, a fun little API called the Calculator API. So I wish I'd thought ahead of time and actually created a Foster's Razors API. That would have been great, but I didn't. And this is really a very simplistic API that allows you to add two numbers.
Okay.
So I can add
Love it.
A
Everybody
and B, right?
It.
Add A equals 5, and just to prove it's real, give me a number.
Oh, 17.
17, of course. Yeah. How could it be anything else? And I hit send, and you see that we get a value 22 coming back to us in XML. Makes sense.
Right. Okay, so this is also the kind of the JSON interface. I don't have to have my own tools for sending.
Oh, so this tool I'm using
requests.
Here, if you haven't seen this.
Oh, this is Postman.
This
sorry.
Is Postman.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this is Postman, which is a cool little app.
Okay, I was thinking we were still in the
portal. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I confused you. No, so this is Postman, which is a fun little HTTP test client,
sure.
right? It's great. This API is just a plain old service hosted on web roles in Azure at the moment. So it's not a managed API. Notice it's returning XML, and it's completely unmanaged at this point. What I want to show you is how easy it is to take this and in a matter of minutes make it a managed API.
Okay.
So I'm just going to copy this URL because we're going to need that. And anyone could come and hit this actually if they want to try it out, right? It's a public facing API. Yeah. And go back to my management portal. We're going to add a new API. Oh, I could have clicked that button though. And I'm going to call it the Calculator Matron is a name I like. And I'm going to paste in the backend URL, right? So it's that calc API that we just saw. And I'm just going to strip off the trailing end here. And I'm going to give it a suffix of calc will do, and hit save. And that's going to add my new API into my API management instance. Okay, so here it is, has no traffic shown yet, but I can also set some settings for this. And I'm actually going to make you painfully watch me type a little bit of text because I want to show you how this is used in the solution later. So this is an API that allows you to do, I'm going to say maths, because I'm British. That's how we say it. We don't say math.
And
we
you
say
uppercase
maths.
It?
Not always. I guess that is valid too. Yeah. Okay. So that's some settings.
That's German.
That is German. Yeah. Let me save that. And then we're going to go and add an operation. So specifically, we're going to add the add operation.
Okay.
Okay.
It already exists in the core API.
It already exists in the service, but we've not kind of surfaced it through the API management proxy.
Well, now what if I have an API with 100 operations? Well, do those all have to be added manually?
If you want to document them, absolutely, right? Which you probably do,
yeah,
right?
That's
you know,
good idea.
And if one thing I didn't show you here is, I'll just pop back out to this screen. I can import this.
I can import all
of these settings from Waddle and Swagger formats, if you've heard of those, right?
Yeah, sure.
So let me dive back in here and go back to operations. And we're going to add the operation. And if you remember, the URL looked like this.
Yeah.
Right? Now, maybe I decide that isn't a pretty URL. Query strings are kind of old hat now. We don't like query strings anymore, right? So what I'm going to do is take this and make this a, the rest police will come and get me for this. I'll be arrested as I leave the studio.
You'll be arrested.
What we're going to do is say add slash A slash B. And we're going to do a...
whatever mapping you want.
So yeah, so we're actually creating a mapping. So this is what's going to be projected on the front end, and this is how it's going to communicate to that that back end, right? So there's a mapping taking place there. If you remember, I think it was a get, and we're going to display a name, which is number adder. It's going to be our display name. And again, this operation allows you to add numbers. Make sense?
Yep. That makes perfect sense.
I'm going to save it. And now my API is pretty much ready, but I want to show you a few more features. So let me just pop back in here quickly. Notice that we can turn on caching.
Oh,
that's interesting. So if I enable caching, that means that if I find a cacheable response in the proxy, it won't even go to the back end. This is going to get you really fast response times, right? Because we're using our in-memory cache. And it's also going to reduce the load on the back end API.
How do you invalidate the cache?
So it's expiry based. So you see you can set an expiry here, and it's keyed. You can key by query string parameters as well as the headers as well, so you can vary by headers. And of course the URL is the other key as well, which would make sense. We're going to add an API that will allow you to programmatically invalidate the cache if you need to as well.
Okay.
Okay, so parameters. Notice that it found, based on our signature, that we had two parameters, A and B, and it just sensed that. So now I can enter a description for these. So this is A. You'd enter a better description, of course. This is B, and I can specify the type. I can even specify my own type if I don't like the ones that are provided. I can specify example values. And the reason I'm going to all this trouble is because this is what's going to be used to generate the documentation.
Okay.
Right, so I'm not going to have to write this documentation. It's going to be generated for me based on the metadata I enter in here. I could add query string parameters. I can enter additional data about responses. You know, I could document what a 401 and authorize might look like, or a 200 OK. Let's document that 200 OK. I can do content negotiation. So, you know, I might have different response types. I can document them all. I'm just going to show text XML here and say that it looks like this. If this was an approximation of the... of the value.
This
and of course,
a sample result.
This is a sample result. And this can all be imported using Waddle and Swagger, as we mentioned before. So I'm going to save that. And I'm almost ready. The last thing I've got to do is publish this API so that it actually gets in the hands of developers. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, we talked about group-based access. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things we're missing now. We need to make this API visible to developers that are in a certain group. And the missing piece there is a product. Mm-hmm. So a product contains APIs and is visible to groups. So what I'm going to do, let's take a look at the products that I already have. And there's a couple of things that we use products for, actually. Products can be used to model how you sell your APIs if you happen to sell APIs. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be. They can just be used for group-based access control as well. But let's imagine you are an email company that sells, that has an email API. Mm-hmm. Right? There are a few out there that do this. Then you might have a starter package that's $100 a month and includes 100 emails. You might have a premium package that's $1,000 a month and includes 1 million emails. Now, products would be used to map that because we can enforce those quotas around the API calls, you know, 100 or 1,000, have an expiry date. That all can be taken care of here in this product. So I'm going to add our API to my test product here. And actually, let me just go back a second.
So the product is a little bit overkill for just a simple demo, but it becomes really handy when you're actually in the business of APIs.
That's right, yeah. For a very simple demo, it's only there to so I can provide access to developers. Right. So I'm just going to add it to an existing product here. And you can see this one is visible to all developers, guests, and administrators. And you can add groups just on this tab here. They can, you know, you can create groups with any name. Mm-hmm. You can add them as you need to and add developers to them, and you control that. So I'm going to go into the test product. I'm going to add an API. I'm going to add our calculator Matron. And this is already published, this product, so I'd already done that earlier. So that means that my API is now in the hands of developers.
Okay.
So we're pretty much done. So the last thing I want to show you here is, what is the developer portal experience that we provide? So if I go and click on developer portal up here, I'll be single signed on to our developer portal. But of course, you could just hit this as a new user. Mm-hmm. No problem, right? So let's warm up for the first time here. And you can see I've been signed in as an administrator.
Okay.
But if I go to this URL, I won't be signed in. I'll have a sign-in option, but I can just click sign up. So a developer comes in here and would sign up for an account to use your APIs. And this is all based on a CMS. So this is our sort of very simple simple out-of-the-box experience. But you can customize this entirely. So I'll show you that in just a minute. Now, I'm signed in as the administrator.
How entirely? Just by changing the content? Or do you have control over the entire web template?
Let me show you some customers that are running on this right now. Some of our launch customers. So if I show you Wellmark, this is the one I mentioned. This is their developer portal.
Interesting. Okay.
And they style this without writing any code. Mm-hmm. You know, they just write some content, and then we have a visual designer that allows you to add all the coloring, et cetera.
Okay.
So that's one. Blue Garden is another launch partner. This is a company that does payroll out of Scandinavia, and you can see it looks beautiful. And then another one I can show you is API.ai, which is also, I mean, again, these all look great, right?
Yeah,
and they're all running on Azure API Management, have been styled using our tools, and just the CMS that's inside the solution. Mm-hmm. So very, very, you wouldn't know these were coming from Azure, right? Okay, so what I want to show you, though, is how our portal generates documentation. So notice I click on APIs, and I can see all of the different APIs
now.
I have. So you're the developer,
right?
This is a developer that's come along to the system. This is an API that allows you to do maths.
Okay.
So there you go. That's where stuff's being used, right? It's being generated. And then I click in here, and we get this beautiful presentation of what the API looks like and how to use it. So a description, the description of the actual operation, what the URL looks like, including that subscription key, which is the thing that identifies you as a developer. Documentation for my parameters, A and B, number, integer, this is A, this is B. Obviously, you'd put your own content in there. And what's more, we take that metadata, and we can even generate code samples that shows you this is how you would invoke this API, in this case, from a Ruby backend, right? And I can copy that and paste it into my...
So it's not an SDK, it's just sample.
It's not a sample, but an SDK is something we have an eye on. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we could generate an SDK for it?
Yeah.
So we're working with the another team in Microsoft to explore that. Here's that body that we created, that example body. Notice how it's all pretty printed and collapsible, so I can explore the structure of the response, et cetera, et cetera.
Is that Monaco?
That is not Monaco, actually. I think that's, I don't know what's powering that. But it is pretty.
It is pretty.
And my favorite thing about this experience is the console. So I want to show you that. So the console is an interactive experience that allows me to play with the API in real time as a developer. So what I'm going to do is notice it's asking me for a number. It's generated this. It gives me some of the suggestions that I entered in as possible alternatives. So I'm going to say 8 and give me a number. Again, let's prove
43.
This real. 43.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. And I'm going to pick a key. So this key identifies me as a developer. Notice it's from my test product subscription. I have a primary and secondary key, which is fully standard practice. And then I hit get, and it's actually going to invoke the API in real time now, and I'll see my response. So here are the headers that came back. Here is the actual response content, and there's 51, which is
Does it show you the raw request? Or is that not
you created the raw request, right? So it shows you what the requested URL looked like.
Okay.
So pretty much, because
that's
is
all
just
there
a
is
get.
To the request.
So I would see other data if there was in there. If you, as the administrator, if you want to debug this, let's imagine it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work is I had incorrectly done that URL mapping, and it was hitting the wrong URL. Then I'd get this experience in that just says, you know, 500 or 400, some kind of issue. So we've put something in here that, notice I've added a little header. APIM traces.
Did you have to add that?
Well, because you're signed in as the administrator in this case, we added it for you.
I see.
Right. Now, what that does is it means the response automatically comes back with an additional header, this APIM trace location. If I copy this and pop it over into, let's say, Chrome in this case, I'll be able to see everything that happened to this request during its flight. So we can see the get arrive on our front end, all the way to what it actually looks like when it goes to the back end.
Okay.
So you can see here it's doing that query string manipulation, et cetera. And that's what got passed to the back end. So if there was some problem, in this case, I could literally click on that and see, oh no, well, this is working fine. But if it wasn't, I'd know what the issue was.
So you're 2 seconds away from the raw call to the core API.
Exactly. You can also see in that trace other things that are going on. So, you know, when policies, which I'll show you in just a moment, it's probably a good segue to policies, how they're being applied, mm-hmm. Et cetera, and where they're being applied in terms of the pipeline. So I think this is a great place to go and show you policies, because policies do some awesome stuff. Like, remember we mentioned XML's kind of, not the cool kid in town anymore. Yeah, everybody loves JSON nowadays.
Yeah.
Why don't we add a policy that converts that XML into JSON on the fly? So I'm going to go back to my publisher portal, right? I'm going to go to the policies tab here. And I'm going to set a policy. I can set policies at different scopes. I can set them at the scope of a product, which we discussed, mm-hmm. at an API, or at an individual operation. So I'm going to go and set it for this individual operation. And you can see I've got this bit of XML configuration down here. So let me zoom in on that for you. And we've already wired in a couple of things. So we turned on caching,
right?
If you remember, I checked that box and I pressed save. Now, that's really just a simpler UI for configuring this.
Okay.
So you can see that's why it's in there. I'm going to remove that, actually. Take it out. Let's take caching out. I decided I don't want caching. Notice how it also contains our rewrite. So those are just policies. Mm-hmm. So our URL rewrite is actually happening in here. It's telling us how to do the rewrite. And we have a huge list of different statements here. That can be applied. So things like converting JSON to XML and vice versa, adding cross-origin resource sharing.
Yeah.
So that's not an easy thing to add to an API necessarily.
Right.
With API management, you can do that right on our proxy, just with some configuration. You can find and replace strings in responses. You can get and set the cache. You can add JSONP support for legacy browsers. Mm-hmm. We can limit the call rate, and I want to show you that in just a few minutes. We can mask URLs, and that's really for if you have hypermedia links in your responses, then you can start to translate them to the, you know, to the proxy URL, for example, so your hypermedia can work. We can restrict caller IPs. We can set headers and twiddle with headers and query strings, quotas, et cetera, et cetera. So tons of stuff. I want to show you how on the outbound response here, we can convert. We can do format conversion. So I'm going to convert from XML to JSON. And a couple of things, like, do you want to consider the accept header before you do this? You probably do. Like, does the client accept JSON? I am going to be lazy, and I am going to say, let's always do it, because I'm just doing a demo here. You probably want to be a little bit more thoughtful about that.
Yeah.
Should I consider the response content type? Of course you should. Don't try and convert JSON into JSON using this tool. You should consider it. But again, I'm just going to brute force it right now and say always try and apply this conversion. And then what type of conversion would I like? And there's a couple of flavors that give you different JSON representations, because XML, you know, is more complicated, shall we say. So there's different ways it can be represented. I like the direct conversion, so I'm going to try that one. I think it produces the prettiest JSON. And you'll see that in a moment.
Pretty JSON's important.
It is indeed. I hit save. And in just a few seconds, that's being pushed out now to that API proxy. So if I go back to my console and hit get again, if that's updated already, then we should have a different response. So it was that easy to get a JSON response out of it. And you can see how it's done a pretty good job of converting.
So there are things that I could have gone back to my API and kind of programmed in, but this allows me to do it at a higher level of abstraction.
Totally.
Kind of closer to the
gate. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a ton of stuff we're going to bring to this solution, you know, along the lines of custom policies and so on that you can upload and add. But we've got a great list to start with that people are finding a lot of adding a lot of flexibility to the way they're publishing their APIs.
Wow.
Let me show you one more thing.
Okay.
So I want to show you the rate limiting, right?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So,
that's right.
Yeah. So if I go to test product, hit add a policy.
I'm talking about metering calls.
I'm going to meter calls. So let's imagine what I want to do now is say, so we added this API to the test product, right? I can go into my inbound request pipeline here, say limit call rate. I want to limit everything, so I'm not going to just one API. Let's say that we only want to be able to do 2 calls in a 60-second period, right? I hit save. This is a big feature.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and now I go back, I hit get, I should hit it once. I get a 200. I hit it twice, I get a 200. I hit it 3 times, I get a 429 too many requests.
Wow.
I even get in the response, try again in 56 seconds.
In 50, hit it again.
Hit it again. You want me to prove that this is working? Here we go.
I'm not a believer yet.
There you go.
Okay,
hit it again in 44 seconds.
No, I believe.
So that's impressive. That's the service. Yeah.
That's impressive. And so that list of policies is a little bit of a strange word, but they're kind of like handlers or
yeah. I mean, you could call them a bunch of things. Yeah. I think it is something that goes in a pipeline. You're thinking about it exactly right. There's an inbound pipeline and an outbound pipeline, and you snap policies in there to affect the behavior of the API.
Are those extensible?
Not yet, but we do plan to do that. So we want to make it so that people can write and add their own policies.
Wow. It's pretty impressive.
Cool. I'm glad you like it.
My mind's worrying with, I think what I'd like to do is just go spin one up. I've got a pretty simple API for the stuff that I have, for the stuff that I do. I'm not in the business of selling APIs. I just utilize them, consume them.
Right.
But it'd be fun to plug one in and just play around with that.
Yeah. Cool.
So how does a person get started? They basically, if they have an Azure subscription, they've got it, right?
Yeah, so if you have Azure, then it's available right away to you in here. You'll see it in here. You know, there's no need to go and sort of turn on the preview or anything for API management. It's available to everybody with an Azure subscription. You can use it as part of your MSDN benefit. You can use it as part of your BizSpark benefit. It's included in that.
And if you've got one of those benefits, then you've got credits, and this is probably just going
to... Exactly.
Eat just a tiny bit into your credit.
Yep, that's right. And so it's only, we charge pricing at the moment is $49 per month for the developer tier, right? And we only charge daily as well. So if you come in and use this for one day, then you don't get charged for a full month, you just get charged for the day. So come in, give it a try, see what you think. Let us have your feedback as well. So, you know, we have a user voice site and a forum, and we'd love to hear from people.
Where's the user voice?
So if you go to feedback.azure.com.
Okay.
Yep. You'll see our user voice for all the features, and then we have an API management tab down here.
Excellent.
Right. You can come in and add your own votes, or go and vote for existing stuff. And we also on the Azure forums. I'm gonna have to search for that. I can't remember what it is. This is a good thing to show someone actually, because I sometimes struggle to drill in on a particular item in the forum. So I'll show you how I do that. There might be a better way. Is you can clear, here I've got every forum selected, so you can clear that, right? And then search for a forum, go and search for API management, there we go, hit that, and then you get the API management forum here. And so come in, ask us questions, come and ask the team questions. We have a Twitter account at API MGMT, and you can also just email the team directly. So it's also API MGMT at Microsoft.com. We love to hear from customers, so get in touch.
Tremendous.
Great.
Wow, anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I think that's it, really. Just keen to get some people come in, try the service, let us know how it's going, and thanks for having us on the show.
Absolutely. All right, well, thanks for joining us on Code Chat today. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Josh.
No worries.
That's fun. Cool. Man, that's really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it.
I mean, it's all for the camera, but I'm all...